Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA over at FanRag Sports and College Hoops at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 podcast. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on social media. That's Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, 331-979-1369. Text and voicemail line. You can hit us up there. Mailbag, we're going to be doing that today as well. So if you're sending, if you're listening to this episode, you get intrigued by one of our conversations, send us a text or a voicemail at 331-979-1369. Interact with us wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. So Matt, thanks for holding it down yesterday. You had a lot of interesting conversations, and I know this is kind of a storyline with the whole Jimmy Butler. Could he possibly make a return? Really enjoyed that conversation. I didn't even actually see the article until you had brought it up on the show. And so I started to dig a little bit, and it made me think at least a little bit. I don't know if that would ever really happen, but it certainly made me think. But today's show, we want to talk a little bit about a couple Bulls hypotheticals that have been floating around Twitter. The annoyance of NBA hindsight Twitter. And then we're going to be taking your mailbag questions as well. But what's going on, Matt? How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordan. Yeah, it was fun to talk about those Rose and Butler hypotheticals yesterday. Obviously, it's Joe Cowley being Cowley. And I think, you know, what I tried to highlight for our listeners and for Bulls Nation is that just because he puts out something that says, hey, a Butler return to the Bulls isn't totally far-fetched, there were two different timelines in reality. Because he was talking about Butler opting out and becoming a free agent next summer and saying, hey, Butler might come back to the Bulls. And the quote that he got from Jimmy was about when it's time to end things, if it's possible for me to come back and, you know, end my career in Chicago, yeah, sure, that'd be nice. So two completely different planes of reality that Cowley was operating on in that story. And sure, it's fun to think about maybe someday Butler coming back and throwing on a Bulls jersey to finish his career, because obviously he was quickly loved by everybody as one star was fading, another star was rising, and Jimmy took advantage of that. Chicago loves him. He loves Chicago. But let's be real. If he opts into free agency in a summer from now, that is not the, well, it's all said and done, I got one more contract left to sign, and I'm going to sign with Chicago. Jimmy's not even going to be 30 years old
yet. I think the funniest part of that entire article is Cowley saying at the end, and he just kind of like slyly puts that in the end of the article of, you know, asking whether or not he'd like to return. And then he goes, Bulls team without Gar Foreman. And Jimmy, it said at the end, you know, Jimmy just kind of smiles, laughs, and walks away. So I thought that was pretty funny, a nice little shot at Gar Foreman, and it seems like Bulls fans and people that cover this team, and even the players get it now too, somebody as important to the Bulls as Jimmy Butler too. I just thought, out of anything, even though the scenario might be kind of crazy, out of anything, the little slight at Gar Foreman was pretty funny.
Of course, man. Cowley go to Cowley.
So, Matt, as I was watching these playoff games yesterday, and I don't want to spend too much time in the NBA playoffs, I know I feel like the last two episodes we've done earlier this week, we've done a good job of breaking down the series until anything really happens. I want to spend the majority of the time today on Bulls-centric things, but I did come across this Westbrook sort of thread yesterday when the Jazz upset the Thunder yesterday, and now the Jazz own a 3-1 lead. And this comes from Nathaniel Friedman. He writes for a bunch of different places, UpRocks, Deadspin, a couple different other sites. And I always find his tweets intriguing about the NBA. And so this is what he said about Westbrook. Before everybody tears Westbrook down, remember, we created the mythology around him. He never asked for it and hasn't changed one bit over the years. Westbrook has been consistently Westbrook since forever. It's the perception of him that changes. We built up Westbrook in part by suspending the usual expectations and assumptions around a superstar in the NBA. Now the novelty is worn off, or other storylines are shinier, or we're outweighed of energy, but it's us, not him. He said, yesterday I went back and read Sean Fennessy, he's the editor-in-chief over at The Ringer's anti-Russ piece, which paradoxically is one of the most vivid and exciting things written by the guy. You can go check that article as well, but he kind of sums it up by saying, I've certainly done a lot of the years to build up the cult of Westbrook. I wonder in retrospect if that did him a disservice. He finishes up with, Iverson and Westbrook comparisons happen a lot, but Iverson played a larger role culturally. It was never just about basketball, and I'm not sure what elevating Westbrook does other than being disruptive to sports. And I was thinking about this, and he brings up a ton of very good points. And I feel like I can closely relate to this with what happened with Derrick Rose. Outside of the injuries, if you take the injuries away, if you still insert the devastating losses the Bulls had and sort of the discomfort between him and Butler sort of at the end, the buildup to the MVP season and hopefully taking down LeBron, and then just kind of some of these weird storylines with not only like his brother being in close ties and just kind of chirping and listening to other things, but I think for a lot of part, and we've said this on multiple different episodes, that Derrick Rose, I felt like he was misunderstood a little bit. He was built up so heavily and all these injuries sort of collapsed him, but the storyline around him seems to kind of parallel this story, but I thought it was very interesting for somebody to come out and say this about Westbrook because of the polarizing player that he is in the NBA. What do you take away from this? What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's and I saw that tweet too, and it definitely made me start thinking about who Russell Westbrook has been throughout his NBA career. And right, I mean, it's kind of a good point. Like, Russ has always been Russ, and Russ will always be Russ, and Russ gonna Russ. You know, Cali gonna Cali, Russ gonna Russ. And I think it's funny, the thing that I first thought about was how over the course of, what, 2 years now since Durant left and defected and went to the Warriors, we've had different little mini episodes of Durant kind of getting caught with his hand in the cookie jar when it comes to validating the opinion of others that Westbrook was the problem, that the team around Durant was never good enough to win a title, that Westbrook was largely the problem. You think back to that Western Conference Finals series a couple years ago, they had the Warriors on the ropes. Warriors were down 3-1. The Thunder absolutely should have won that series. And then Westbrook was Westbrook. And instead of closing out a series, you got Westbrook going AWOL. AWOL is not the right term. Going rogue, I should say. And what is the biggest knock on Westbrook his entire career? Taking ill-advised shots. Not being a smart basketball player in the situation, jacking up shots he shouldn't be taking, and not, when he should be, defecting to Durant, who is the better, more dominant player. And that has never changed. And it was insanely fun to watch Durant ditched me, I'm going to go, you know, drag this team as far as I can drag them last season, his MVP season, where he was the first since Oscar to average a triple-double, and then to watch him do it again this season, even despite the additions of Paul George and Carmelo, it's fun to watch Russell Westbrook. He is probably one of the most exciting players in the league right now. Has been for the last 5 years, 7 years. But he is never going to be the guy. I mean, you compare him to Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson dragged a team to the finals in 2001 that was, what, him, Eric Snow, Theo Ratliff, George Lynch, Aaron McKee? I guess, like, yeah, an ancient Dikembe Mutombo was on that team, but he barely played. That is the difference to me. Iverson, as an undersized guard, was so good that he could drag a team like that to the finals. How far did Russ manage to get that team last year by himself? Not very far. Didn't even make the playoffs.
I think the Iverson comparisons are justified, but I understand the cultural reference there too. And for as much as you think how Iverson impacted the culture of the NBA, just at, like, in terms of fandom, I feel like Russell Westbrook has done the same. And that's the more intriguing part of this entire story. I know people want to crush him for his game and saying, you know, last year with him averaging a triple-double, this year averaging a triple-double this season, but still not being able to take that next step as a superstar should be able to, as a number one on your team that should be able to. This struggle and potential fallout in the first round that looks evidently about to happen against the Jazz, like, that looks really bad for a player that is considered a top 10 player in this league. And then to pair that with a Paul George, and who could be considered a top 20 player in this league and a top 5 defender in this league. So to add all that together, I think it is predominantly true that a lot of fans have built up this mythology. And I think along with that, that could be same said for Derrick Rose here, especially maybe in his last 4 years or so. I even said this about Steph Curry. Like, we got such an overload of Steph Curry in the media and people covering him and this otherworldly superstar, which he is. And granted, he won and he was able to do that, but he had a ton of superstars around him too, peaking at the same time. But it got to a point now where I think there's a lot more fans out there that hated Steph Curry maybe than they did 2 or 3 years ago. I think that comes with winning. Steph Curry's never changed as a type of person or the player that he is. And I think that goes the same along with Russell Westbrook, and you could even make the comparison to Derrick Rose. I think about other players that have changed, their personality has changed because of them or influences around them not made up by the fans. Look at Jimmy Butler. I think Butler came into this league, you know, very quiet, humble kid. He's still very humble, but he's changed in character. His personality is more vibrant. He wants to be a face. He loves social media. Like, these things have changed a little bit, and I don't know if that's from Dwayne Wade or the popularity he's got around the NBA or just the overall play has been maximized from Jimmy Butler. But I look at a player that has changed because of himself or the surroundings and a player that maybe was changed by the fans' perspective, and they're two different things. So I see what Russell Westbrook sitting on that left side of fans have changed the narrative around him, and I look at other players like a Butler who have changed the narrative himself. So those, I think, are two big things that maybe NBA fans can't separate, and sometimes it does do a disservice to a lot of stars in this league, and you can see it kind of can crush them at times.
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that you take Russell for what he is. And as I said, he's one of the more entertaining players to watch. And if you give me the entire pick of any player in the NBA, if I'm watching a regular season NBA game in which the Bulls are not one of the two teams, and I can pick one player to watch in a regular season game, I'm picking Westbrook. Because he treats every regular season game like it is overtime of a game 7. That's who Westbrook is, and that's why a lot of people love him. He is that much of a entertainment factor in the league, which is rife with entertainment factors. He is the best one. Without question, in my opinion, he is the best one. Entertainment factor in the NBA, Russell Westbrook, on any given night.
I would agree. But, and, I mean, you could throw LeBron James in there, too.
Sure. But when he had those post-game comments in Game 3 after Rubio lit him up and he said, you know, I'm going to shut that shit down. I guarantee you that. I would have bet my life savings, which are modest, I would have bet my life savings on Westbrook overcorrecting, oversteering, and trying to make that a thing. And what happened? He made that a thing. Got too aggressive, got in foul trouble. The Thunder trying to hide his foul trouble in the second half doomed them. They lost the game. Westbrook imploded like a dying star. I would have bet money on that happening because that's the player that Westbrook is mentally. And that's a player that Westbrook has always been mentally. And sometimes his talent overpowers and overcomes his short fuse, his temper, his mental deficiencies on the court. And they are wonderful, spectacular moments to watch when peak Westbrook is the best player on the court. But I was not at all surprised to see how Game 4 unfolded, because the downside, the knock, the thing that will always prevent Westbrook from being compared to some of the other greats of this generation is, dude's mentally weak. You knew he was going to snap. You know he's about to snap. And then what happens? He snaps.
Very well said. And I think I'm sitting there right there with you. And so for you, it seems like it's more of the X's and O's. For me, I feel like it's more of the cultural narrative around him and sort of how it's been built up. And so those are very interesting points. And, you know, for people who, especially Bulls fans, like, you're looking around the league and you can appreciate these stars, especially players in the Western Conference, just because the Bulls don't have to see them until eventually, if they would ever get back to a finals. That type of appreciation and those types of storylines, we've seen some weird storylines in Chicago over the last 5 years. So I think Bulls fans can kind of relate to some of these storylines with other teams around the league. But very, very interesting story with Russell Westbrook. And I'm interested to see if there's any fight left in that OKC team. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, got two quick Bulls hypotheticals for you, Matt. And for Bulls fans out there that you're going to want to stay tuned for, because this is peak hindsight NBA Twitter at its absolute worst. So stay with us here on Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. And on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com. And subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, Matt. So it's that time of the year, and this is happening earlier than maybe I thought it was going to, but every year around the summer, it gets harder and harder for, feel like, to find fresh content and to find things to talk about. And NBA Twitter is very good at finding things to talk about. When there is literally no storylines at all, people will, you know, it seems like it's hourly that people love coming up with new hypotheticals and things to think about. But one of the things that I absolutely hate about NBA Twitter is the hindsight analysts out there, people who love to bring up the, whoa, if you could go back to here, if you could go back to this point, what would you change? And so there was two of these that came out yesterday, and it got a lot of traction. So which one do you want to go with first, Matt? Do you want to go with a complete organizational, quote unquote, dummies that could have been sort of a lineup, 11 or 12 players that the Bulls could drastically have changed?
Yeah. Let's do that lineup one first, because it's hilarious.
All right, so let's just go with this. So NBA Couchside, at NBA Couchside on Twitter, he put out a tweet on Friday that said, if the Bulls weren't big, incompetent dummies, they could have a roster that looks like this. Spencer Dinwiddie, Jimmy Butler, OG Anunoby, Nikola Mirotic, Robin Lopez, Rajon Rondo, Etuan Moore, Justin Holiday, Jordan Bell, Denzel Valentine, and he didn't put this one in there, but for my argument's sake, maybe for yours as well, throw Bobby Portis's name in there too. He says, that's a very good team that probably wins at least 50 games. This got almost 50 likes on Twitter, so there was obviously a lot of traction. Matt, I'm just going to let you touch on this first.
So that guy listed a star player in Jimmy Butler, and then a bunch of guys that are okay, mid-level NBA talent. What in what world is that roster winning 50 games? And even if they did have a regular season where they overachieved and did win 50-some games, is that collection of players winning a playoff series? Doubtful. Is it winning multiple playoff series? Very unlikely. Is that collective roster beating any team that LeBron James has led to the finals out of the East in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, assuming the hypothetical scenario of all of those guys who have come and gone or could have been dating back to, you know, around 2014 or so? Is that collection, is that roster beating any of the teams that LeBron has taken to the finals in the last 4 years? Hell no. What, like, what are you talking about? You want to play hindsight? How about something that's a bit more of a compelling argument? You want to trash the Bulls front office? How about a bit more of a compelling argument than that roster that you are gushing over? That is, I don't even think a 50-win team. And even if it is, a team that is not winning a championship. So what's the point?
Okay, this is the one thing that I will give this guy credit for, because, you know, he sent this tweet out on 420, so maybe he was off that good gas, or, you know, that good cushy pop.
Rips from the bone.
Yeah, I mean, in what NBA world are we living in that roster constructed of 11 players is going to win 50 plus games? I get it. The Eastern Conference is not very good this year. Like, I get that. But let me just throw this out here. And this is just one stat that you could combine all these players with and try to run some type of simulation to see where this team would end up. And that's this is just considering this season, these players and what they did this season with their respected teams. So I took all the win shares from each player that he had listed, and I even added Bobby Portis to that list because he's under contract. He would have been there. This is assuming Cristiano Felicio didn't get his contract last summer for 4 years, $32 million, opting out of Dwayne Wade, paying him off. This is assuming that Jordan Bell didn't get sold and the Bulls decided to draft him, which we already said a million and a half times that the Bulls didn't even scout Jordan Bell, so I don't even think he would have been taken there. But all right, all 11 players combined for a 39.5 win shares this season. That puts you back right where you were in 2017, right? Where the Bulls were even 41. Okay, you had a couple more players there. You're around 41 to 42 wins just from win share. I mean, you can do this a million different ways, but this is the one tangible thing that I could throw out there right away. So to me, okay, 41, 42 wins. Yeah, that gets you, what, a 6, a 7 seed in the Eastern Conference and a first-round exit?
Sometimes not even.
So no thanks. And it blows my mind that we like to just keep going back to this. Like, we're already through the first year of the rebuild, and we're still retreading all of this. I think sometimes Bulls fans just get in their own way.
There are Bulls fans out there who are still bitter about Jordan Bell and or Spencer Dinwiddie. Look, I'm happy that Spencer Dinwiddie made a name for himself this season, and yeah, maybe the Bulls should have thought more carefully about keeping him around because he looks like a good player now. But if that is what's really, you know, getting your panties in a twist right now, come on. Really? There are bigger fish to fry. There is a future to worry about. The Bulls have a very long and stressful to-do list this offseason. They got to nail this draft. They got to figure out LaVine's contract. They got to see if they can keep David Nwaba. They got to see if they can sign an extension of Bobby Portis. Think in the present and the future. Are you really up all night on Twitter seeing if you can get other sympathizers to say, oh man, what if we had this roster of Butler and Dinwiddie and Jordan Bell? And like, dude, give me a friggin' break.
We're talking about that fucking Spencer Dinwiddie right now.
That hypothetical roster ain't winning championships. So what are you so buttered about?
My biggest thing too is there is what? Spencer Dinwiddie, Jimmy Butler, OG Anunoby, Rajon Rondo, Etuan Moore, Jordan Bell. That's six players that are playing on different rosters this year. Do you think that they would turn out to be those types of players if they stayed on this Bulls team? Like, this is so many assumptions.
Yeah,
that you're just...
Hey, why didn't we keep Etuan Moore? Oh, because he had a really solid final season in Chicago and earned a fat contract that the Bulls couldn't match. Like, what? In what world? Is this just a world where the salary cap doesn't exist?
And like, Jordan Bell plays on the best team, arguably the best team in this generation in his rookie year. And yeah, he's played really well. Do you think he plays that well with the Chicago Bulls? OG Anunoby played with the number one seed Toronto Raptors this year in a really good system under a coach that could win coach of the year in the NBA this year. Do you think he turns out the way he does? I think that's the most faith I have in that. Does Nico Mirotic play the same way he does if he plays a full season on this Bulls team and that fight doesn't happen? Like, there are so many.
And how about Rondo? Like, I love watching Rondo in that Pelican series, and it looks like he's got a great fit there. But let's remember that before he led the Bulls to two surprising wins in the first round against Boston, he got benched. Regular season Rondo got benched in favor of Jaren Grant. Jaren Grant! Like, you got, like, regular season Rondo, when he was in a Bulls uniform, was bad! In what world are you living in?
So, we gotta stop this. So, don't torture yourself by doing this all summer. It's going to be a very long summer if you do this. You can what if in hindsight yourself to death, and I hate this because it brings out the worst conversations. And I know you guys are probably saying, well, you guys hate this so much, but you're bringing it up on the show. Well, I'm bringing it up because it's so dumb. And to sit there and just keep doing this, like, I could sit here for another 40 minutes and tell you why this wouldn't work. And where you would end up is exactly where we were all as a fan base last year yelling, I don't want to be in NBA hell anymore. I want to try a new path. This isn't working. We've tried this for 5 years now. It doesn't work. The Bulls weren't committed to Butler either. They weren't going to build around him. They were going to try to build with him. And they didn't believe him to be a number one star to take a team to an NBA Finals. That was clear. That's why they traded him. So to me, to sit there and say, well, yeah, the Bulls could have got the 5 seed this year, and like we could have had five playoff games to watch. Like, how is that fun? The goal as a fan base should want the team to win multiple championships. And maybe I'm just an idiot. And maybe I'm somebody who there's a lot of fans out there that are perfectly fine with being a first round exited team and being a 42 to 44 win team every single year and doing this NBA hell thing. But I'm not.
Yeah, their names are Michael Reinsdorf and Gar Foreman.
I'm not. I'm done with it. So, like, the goal is championships. And it obviously didn't work when you tried to build it on the fly. And they didn't see it in Butler, and it didn't work bringing in Wade and Rondo. We knew it all wouldn't work then. It just hasn't worked. So you got to try a new path. And maybe you don't believe in Chris Dunn or Lauri Markkanen or Zach LaVine or what they're doing in this year one of this rebuild or even who they take in the draft. But you got to try something different.
Yeah.
Because what the Bulls were doing before didn't work.
And if you don't believe in this young Bulls trio and this young Bulls rebuild yet, that's fine. It's your right to not believe in it and your right to be skeptical. But if you believe in it less than the likelihood of that roster that guy on Twitter listed as being like, oh man, what if? Wouldn't it be nice if? Dude, I don't know. I'd pick a different sport because you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, I'm going to say the other hypothetical for tomorrow's episode. So stay tuned if you want to hear of another really, really stupid Bulls hypothetical in hindsight Twitter.
Hint. It's about Melo.
So we'll save that for tomorrow's episode because I want to get as many questions as we can for mailbag because we had a ton of texts this week. So we're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we're taking all of your questions from mailbag. Remember, you can send us all of your mailbag questions and your voicemails at 331-979-1369. Taking all your questions next. Stick around here on Locked On Bulls. All right, to finish up the show, we are going to do our weekly segment of mailbag. Tons of text messages this week. I did send out a Twitter question because I was interested to see where the fan base is at after year one of the rebuild. I sent out a question on Twitter. You can follow us there, at Locked On Bulls. I said, you know, what are your goals as a fan base, as a fan of the Chicago Bulls? What is your goal for 2018 and 2019? What do you want to see develop in year two of the rebuild? Got a lot of interesting texts back, so I want to touch on some of those, Matt. We've got some questions intermixed as well, and maybe a funner question or two at the end of the show that some people were asking about. But to kick it off, this is one that I think is pretty interesting, so we can kind of just go quick. We're going to try to rapid fire through as many of these questions as possible. This first one says, hi, Locked On Bulls. This is Sam from LA. I was wondering about the Bulls' backup rotation. Will they continue to use Felicio as the fourth big, or use two power forwards off the bench, or use a three-wing lineup like the Jazz or the Celtics? Great podcast. Keep up the awesome work, guys. So, Matt, what do you think here? In terms of rotations for next year, it might be a little bit too early because we don't know what's going on in the draft and maybe what they do this offseason, but maybe a too-early-to-tell look at what the Bulls might do with their front court next year.
Yeah, it's... Again, a lot of this might depend on if the Bulls do, in fact, take one of those bigs with their pick, the first of their two first-round picks. Obviously, everybody's disappointed in the season that Felicio had. I'm sure he himself is disappointed. So, based on what Paxson said at the end-of-season press conference, at least to start training camp and going into the 2018-19 season, unless they get some kind of trade offer they can't turn down, Rolo's going to be the starting center. And then behind him, I feel like the Bulls, because they signed him to that extension, they're still going to try to get Felicio minutes. If they don't sign a big, or I'm sorry, if they don't draft a big next month, I think they're going to roll with Lopez as their starter, and they're going to try to develop Felicio and make him work. And I'm not enthusiastic. I'm not optimistic about that. But as far as the other options of, you know, playing a three-wing lineup, you need three playable wings before you can do that. And the Bulls don't have three playable wings. So that nixes that.
We don't even have one playable wing.
No, exactly. And then the other, you know, obviously the other idea is trying to get some minutes and experimenting with either Bobby or Lowry at the five. And I think the Bulls will do some combination of seeing what they have there and then sticking with Rolo as long as he's in town and trying to make Felicio suck less. I mean, that's the situation as I see it.
I'm with you on the Robin Lopez is going to start next year and him next to Lauri Markkanen. For the time that Chris Dunn and Robin Lopez were on the floor, I think this is important as well, especially early on in the season. Fred Hoiberg is going to try and develop that pick and roll game, not only with Lauri Markkanen, but he had some success, him and Chris Dunn, last year with Rolo. So I think for the beginning part, you want to try and get Chris Dunn to start off on a good foot. He's going to start it. If we're talking about backup role, I think I'm with you too. The thing that I would want to see is the Bulls bring back Noah Vonleh on that qualifying offer for, I think, $4.7 million. I don't know what kind of gauge or what kind of offers he might get in this summer, if any. But if the Bulls can bring him back on the cheap, I like the two power forwards in the front court, like especially if you're coming off the bench with a guy like Bobby Portis and you throw Noah Vonleh in there, a little bit of a smaller lineup in Fred Hoiberg's system seems to work, and it's worked around the NBA for offensive-minded coaches, and that's where Fred Hoiberg is at this point. So I'd like that, but I think I'm with you too. I think they're going to give Felicio another go. This is going to be a big summer for him as well. He's got to get back into shape. They've said they've touted him last year, saying he came into camp kind of not really in shape. So I wonder if he tries to take strides there, and at least for the beginning part of the season, maybe the first 20, 25 games of the season, you'll probably see Felicio get decent minutes. If he still is as bad as advertised this year, I think we'll see some changes come. But for me, I would love them to bring back Noah Vonleh and see what you have there and see if that can be something they can go towards, maybe a small ball lineup coming off the bench. I think that would be pretty interesting.
Let's move on to the next one. This is in regard to the upcoming draft. A lot of people in Bulls Nation anxiously awaiting. To me, Jordan, this one's cut and dry. Should be a quick conversation. Who should the Bulls take if both are available? Michael Porter Jr. or Trey Young? To me, the answer is Michael Porter Jr., and it's not close.
I'll just refer everybody to my tweet a couple days ago where it's a picture of the weekend looking like he's crying into the mic, and I said, this will be me if the Bulls draft Trey Young at number 6. So that can pretty much tell you what I think about that. If Michael Porter Jr. is on the table, you're taking him. And like I said before, I think the Bulls reach on Mikal Bridges if Michael Porter Jr. isn't there. I think if Mohamed Bamba is around, if it's Trae Young, Colin Sexton, those types of guys, I think the Bulls will reach on Mikal Bridges at number 6.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there, and I think I agree with that logic. Bamba is too much of a project. Mikal Bridges is going to be at least a decent, if not good to great, 3-and-D wing in the league, and that's exactly what this roster needs right now, and he'll be more ready to contribute than Mo Bamba. So if Porter's not there, it's Mikal Bridges. Do not touch Trae Young.
All right, so this is another pretty quick one, I think. We haven't really given our opinions on this, but this says comes from the 847. It says, hey guys, quick question. Can Donovan Mitchell steal Rookie of the Year from Ben Simmons? Can make a very valid argument in Donovan Mitchell's favor. What do you guys think? Matt, I'll let you touch on this first.
I touched on this briefly yesterday, just talking about how much fun it's been to watch Mitchell play in this Jazz Thunder series. And my opinion then, and I'll share it with you now in case you missed yesterday's, Ben Simmons is probably going to win Rookie of the Year, and I don't have a problem with that. All of this, you know, drama and the NBA Twitter beefs and Mitchell wearing that, you know, hoodie that said, like, oh, here's the definition of what a rookie is, and Ben Simmons isn't a rookie. He's a second-year player. He's a redshirt rookie, whatever. Like, it's such a silly argument, and I don't really care. Both players have been great. Both players have been such a joy to watch, and we're probably going to get to see both of them play in at least one more playoff series. Simmons for sure, because the Sixers knocked off Miami last night. We're probably going to see Utah beat OKC, and we get to watch more of both of them. So I don't have a firm opinion one way or the other on whether or not Mitchell deserves to win it more than Simmons. They're both great rookies. One of them is a quasi-rookie. Who the hell cares? Enjoy that there is such young, amazing talent being displayed in these NBA playoffs.
If I had to pick one rookie of the year, I'm going with Ben Simmons, too. And, like, you can have the argument for days if you want about whether or not Ben Simmons is actually quote-unquote a rookie. According to the NBA, he is. Donovan Mitchell will argue the opposite of that. But both players have been phenomenal to watch. I think I'm going with Ben Simmons, though, just the body of work. And I think people are getting a little bit steered because of what's going on in the playoffs this first round. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell has been a budding superstar in his rookie year this year, and the stats out there of first player to do fill in the blank, Donovan Mitchell's name has been linked with that, and a lot of records Michael Jordan set, too. So I can appreciate his game, and I think he's going to be awesome, but I think Ben Simmons' body of work all season has been really great. And there were stretches where Donovan Mitchell didn't look too great, two or three weeks here and there throughout the season. So I think I'm going with Ben Simmons if you still consider him a rookie, which I do. If you haven't played a single game in the NBA, I consider him a rookie. So I'm picking Ben Simmons over Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. All right, let's go back to the draft. This one comes from a 620 area code. If the Bulls get lucky and win the lottery, are you taking Doncic or Ayton? My answer is Ayton, because imagine a Bulls front court for the next 10 years of Lowry Markkanen and DeAndre Ayton. I think as exciting of a prospect as Luka Doncic is, and I think he deserves to go top three in this draft, I think he's going to be a great player at the NBA level. Certainly would be fun and exciting to throw him into the mix as a playmaker on this young Bulls team. Ayton is a big who looks to be dominant at the NBA level. Sky-high ceiling, is NBA ready already, and is still so young and can develop his game. Imagine the kind of NBA player Ayton can be when he is in his mid-20s. If you have the opportunity to make a Bulls front court of Markkanen and Ayton as the anchor of your franchise, you do not turn that down.
The only thing I will say about this is Lauri Markkanen, maybe if the Bulls do end up with that first pick, crossing my fingers, I feel like Lauri Markkanen is going to low-key try to make a pitch for his boy Luka Doncic. And I just don't see you can't go wrong with either of these guys. And I know a lot of people might be favored because of Ayton's size.
Hey, guess what? Markkanen's not a member of this Bulls front office.
Well, they do. I would assume that any smart front office would at least take a little bit of consideration from their players and maybe what they think too. Obviously, it's not going to hold a whole lot of ground, but still, hey, there could be anything. But you could say the same thing about, hey, go out and get my, one of my alma maters best in DeAndre Ayton. So my thing is, DeAndre Ayton was a man among boys playing in the NCAA, and for me, I love his game, and I'm with you too. A front court of him and Lauri Markkanen for the next decade, I don't care even at this point. The development of those two guys would be unbelievable. The only thing that scares me is sort of a DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin not being able to get to the finals with a dominant front court. That's the only thing that scares me, that in turn, I think, looking at the modern NBA, that's the only other one that I can think of is like a dominant front court that's tried to push towards the NBA Finals, and that's my goal, is the Bulls need to get back to the NBA Finals with this pick. So I don't know. Doncic can do a lot of things. He can play the wing, and he can play the two, and he can play the three. If you're looking to cover up what Zach LaVine's defensive weaknesses are, that might be the role. And you know how the Bulls love their international stars. So
that they do.
It's kind of a toss-up here, but I mean, I can't go wrong with either one of the guys, but DeAndre Ayton, he was a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch in the NCAA, so I'd be cool with either guy.
I think I would too. I'm just like, I'd probably lean Ayton over Doncic, but you know, say the Bulls luck their way into two, and one of them is taking one, you're taking the other one of those two guys, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
You're taking, if you know, no offense to the other bigs, but say the Bulls luck their way into the second spot, and team one takes Doncic, you're taking Ayton. If team one takes Ayton, you're taking Doncic.
All right, two more questions real quick to wrap up here. This is an interesting one, Matt. This comes from the 773. It says, hey guys, I just wanted your thoughts on this. For the most part, the past few years, a lot of Bulls Nation have had a strong disliking for Gar Pax, LOL, from a management standpoint. Personally, I love going to Bulls games, buying and repping the Bulls regardless of how they do. Of course, I want to see them win and prosper, but I still want to rep and support the team no matter what. Are people like me a problem for the organization's success? Thanks, guys, and go Bulls. Matt, you want to touch on this one first?
Well, this is a fun one. So I guess our listener here is asking, is it a problem? Is he hurting the organization's success by still buying in, literally and figuratively, to this organization when a lot of people in the fan base are frustrated and calling for a removal of the primary members of the front office? And my answer to that is a hearty, doesn't matter. Does not matter. It's funny, and you know, we talk about how the Bulls still led the league in attendance this season, and those numbers are kind of fluky because it's actually tickets sold and not butts in the seats, and there were certainly fewer butts in the seats this year for the Bulls, but still, being a sub-30 win rebuilding team, the Bulls sold a lot of tickets and put a lot of butts in the seats this year. For every billboard that you put up with your GoFundMe page for the removal of this Bulls front office, one fan, two fans, 1,000 fans buying jerseys and tickets or not buying jerseys and tickets in the grand scheme does not make a difference because the Bulls fan base is that big. And the front office does not care about the slight upticks or downticks in concessions revenue, ticket revenue, merchandise revenue. Not to belittle you as a fan, whoever it is that sent us this text at area code 773, not to belittle your significance as a Bulls fan, but you are one tiny grain of sand on a gigantic friggin' beach, and no, it does not matter.
Damn, you just broke the hearts of hundreds of Bulls fans out there right now.
That's the truth, isn't it?
This is what I'll say. The Chicago Bulls will be here a lot longer than Gar Forman and John Paxson. I've said this for any team that I've ever rooted for, or for people that are fed up and frustrated with their team, or just want to stand pat with, you know, even if there's frustrations going on in the front office and people are tired of what's going on, but you still kind of have this complexity where you're kind of fighting with yourself. You're fighting with the fandom that you've had with the team and also your frustrations. I always tell people never to just give up completely unless you're completely done with the team. Giving up buying merch and repping your team, because for me, I look at it this way. It's not a testament to what Gar Forman and John Paxson do. I'm not rooting for those guys. I'm sitting here wanting to cheer on guys like Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn. You should be about the players first and what the players are doing. And if you're repping Bulls, the Chicago Bulls, you're representing the players more so than I think the front office or anything, any type of stigma that comes with some of the negative things that have been said about Gar Pax. So I'll tell people, don't stop buying Bulls merchandise or Bulls jerseys or going to games if that's something you really truly love. Like, I had this complex with the White Sox for a long time, and I know there's probably a lot of listeners out there that can feel the same way. Funny thing is, they're both owned by the same owner. I had this complex, you know, with the Sox and meddling in mediocrity and still buying merch and repping the team, even though we were frustrated with the avenue that it was going. So that's my thing, is like, don't let Gar Forman and John Paxson and your dislike for them or the fan base's dislike for them change the way you are as a fan. If that's the way it is, then don't be a fan of the Bulls, but don't let it change and manipulate the way you think and want to rep this team. Because I still buy Bulls stuff all the time, too.
Yeah, and you know, I went to a handful of games this season, and I'm definitely going to buy me one of those new sweet Nike City Edition jerseys that are absolutely fire. And when I want to spend money on the Bulls, I'll spend money on the Bulls. When I don't, I won't. But I think you make a good point, Jordan, which is that, look, for a good portion of, say, 2014 to 2016, I was really upset with the Bulls front office and a lot of moves they made or didn't make and a lot of the excuses that they were throwing out there, and I was calling for them to be removed. And it doesn't necessarily mean that my opinion on the matter has changed. I'm not convinced that Paxson and Foreman are the best guys to be in their roles right now, but at some point you have to realize that, you know, an orange is an orange and an apple is an apple, and the Reinsdorf family still owns this team, and Gar and Paxson aren't going anywhere anytime soon, so why cry about it? Why spend all of your time as a Bulls fan if you truly love this team and this organization and want to see them do well? Why yell FireGar Pax, hashtag FireGar Pax, over and over and over until your lungs are dry if you know it won't make a difference? Spend your time, as you said, rooting for the young guys, hoping that the rebuild is going in the right direction. Get excited for the draft. Do some of your own background research on some of the guys that the Bulls might draft. And then when we draft those guys, go watch the film on them. Invest your time in more useful things than yelling FireGar Pax, because that's not going to change anything that is going on at the Advocate Center, at the United Center, within that organization, and the people that run it. Spend your time as a useful member of a fan base.
The last thing I'll say on this is I would hope by now that most of those people that were strongly putting out the FireGar Pax, all the billboard donators and, wow, hold on. I'll say this last thing. Gar Pax will not be around as long as the Chicago Bulls are, so don't change the way you're going to be a fan of the Chicago Bulls. I think about it this, and maybe this will change some mindsets of Bulls fans out there that are dealing with this sort of back and forth with yourself. And believe me, I've had situations over the last year, especially when the Bulls were doing really bad in the winter to start the season. I like second guess myself. I'll like go to my closet and say, "Ooh," I'll like react to pulling on the Bulls hoodie. Say, "Eh, I don't know if I want to put on that today," or my Bulls hat. Like it's I don't know as a fan if it's just a fan or if it's just me, but I second guess myself sometimes when teams are doing bad or you're frustrated with the team you don't necessarily want to rep. But if you're a fan out there who, regardless of what the Bulls are doing, you still want to rep the team, I think it's most important, because you're repping the players and those guys the most, the ones that work hard every single day for the product on the floor. So for me, maybe turn your fandom towards cheering and being excited about the young guys than maybe having this complexion or this fight with yourself about wearing Bulls stuff and whether or not that impacts the front office or things like that. So keep your eye on the players and focus on that if you want to wear Bulls stuff. And keep going to games. Keep buying merchandise, because the Bulls are going to be here a lot longer than the front office will.
That's good. Okay, let's use that positive note to transition into this question that we posed to all of you, to our listeners. And we got some commonality amongst our responses as far as what you see the primary goal to be for this upcoming year two of the rebuild. And Jordan, we'll get into a few of them, but I wanted to toss this one to you because this is the opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to people who are too down on this team versus people who are realistic about this team. And then this guy... I'm sorry to call you out by name, buddy, but you left us your name, so I'm gonna give our listeners your name. This comes from Pharaoh with regard to our question about the primary goal for the 2018-19 season. Pharaoh says, playoffs with home court advantage. 4 seed is feasible in a wide open Eastern Conference. Don't subscribe to the fears or a narrative that fans panic. That makes for a feeble-minded fan base. It's kind of what you and I were just talking about, Jordan. The Bulls are on an upward trajectory. Stay the course. That's from Pharaoh. So primary goal next season, top 4 seed. Your thoughts?
I love the optimism. I can't knock Bulls fans for being optimistic. There's a difference between being an optimistic fan, being a realistic fan, and just being pessimistic for the sake of always being negative. And I think if you look nationally, like the Bulls is a fan base, and I it's so funny because I see people talk about this, and I think it's so true, and I wonder about other fan bases if they're similar to us. And we get touted as this always negative fan base, and maybe that's just because of the course the Bulls have gone over the last decade. That's fair. But to hear some optimistic questions, some tweets, some texts like this, I love it. I don't think I'm with you, though. I said that a playoff seed would be breaking expectations and would be exceeding expectations for next year if the Bulls squeaked in at the eighth or the seventh seed. That's exceeding expectations. But I said, I don't know if that's even realistic. To be the four seed, you're talking about Zach LaVine coming back and being an all-star next year, or Lauri Markkanen or Chris Dunn. And you're talking about the rookie taking at number six this summer, turning out to be an absolute stud and potentially a rookie of the year candidate next season. Like, all of those things have to line up for you to potentially be a four or five seed. I love the optimism. I'm not with you, though.
Yeah, no, exactly, Jordan. I love the optimism, Pharaoh, but I'm sorry, buddy. I know that there's this notion that the Eastern Conference is weak, and so, I mean, certainly the back half of it, you know, 4 through 8 is never anything truly special in the Eastern Conference in, what, the last decade? But to say that it's wide open, no. Have you been watching these Philadelphia 76ers? Have you been watching this Celtics team that is without Kyrie and their newly signed Gordon Hayward? They had Gordon Hayward for one quarter of basketball and still got the top seed in the East. Or, I'm sorry, the two seed in the East. Toronto, for all the talk, I don't think they're going to blow up Lowry and DeRozan. Indiana looks like they could be on their upward trajectory with Oladipo, you know, Sabonis. They got good young players. They could be a top four seed next year. And I don't, for all the talk, I'm not convinced that the Wizards are going to blow things up. And if they run it back with Beal and Wall and Porter, no, a top four seed? Are you out of your freaking mind?
Yeah.
Again, love the optimism, but let's be real. Bulls, if they, as you said, overachieve, maybe they sneak into the playoffs next year. Top four seed, put down the hash pipe.
If this was a text that we got a year from now, and the Bulls had been in this first round, even no matter what they would do in the first round, this is a text that I got a year from today, I could probably be on board with that. That's saying that the Bulls make the playoffs as an 8 or a 7 seed next year. Still, I think the Bulls are at the very least, a year from making the playoffs, or at least trying to contend for a playoff spot. I think they're closer than a lot of other rebuilding teams, but I don't think they're quite there yet. But I have to say, I love the optimism, and it's a nice change of spot from all the negativity in the hindsight Twitter that I absolutely freaking hate.
Sure. And let's also say this. A goal is something that you set yourself, you know, a goal that you set for yourself that is not easy.
Yeah, true.
Nobody should set easy goals for themselves. So it would be a very tough goal to set and a high bar to set. So I guess credit there. Not only is it thinking optimistically, but it's saying I'm not a person who sets easy goals for myself. So good for you, Pharaoh.
Last thing real quick, Matt, I wanted to touch on before we get out of here. We had a question just kind of asking about our production of the show. And somebody said, this comes from the 620, said, when are you guys going to change the voice clips at the beginning of the pod? So the opening of our show, he said, you know, the one with John Paxson and Nico. The first thing I want to mention, I guess we've never really talked about the open of our show. That's not Nico Mirotić. That's
Markkanen.
Yeah, that's Lauri Markkanen.
That's what I thought.
That's the first media interaction he had outside of the draft. I think that was at Bulls Media Day when he was talking.
Yeah, I was like, that's definitely Lauri Markkanen. I don't know what you're talking about.
So you have John Paxson at the beginning. You've got Lauri Markkanen there. And we also have Gar Foreman at the end, at the beginning of that open. I am working on a brand new open because I know it's a little bit outdated. I was waiting for the end of the year press conference to hear what John Paxson had to say. So I am working very hard on a brand new open for this season. I'm kind of debating on when to bring that out. I think I might wait until the NBA draft is over so we can be a little bit hyped on
draft
that
night.
But yes, I am working on a great open for the show, and so that will be changed sooner than rather than later.
I wanted to give a little bit of credit to people who sent us answers to that question we posed to them real quick. These were my two favorite answers. This one comes from 682. The primary goal, focus on getting our main three, Lowry, LaVine, and Dunn, and our lottery draft pick, time together on the court and not worry about results. Let them mesh properly and let the role players grow into their roles. I love that answer. To me, next season is about exactly that. And then the other thing the next season is about, this is an answer from a 773, find a solid, reliable 3-and-D player. We are lacking at that position. Absolutely. And then they also say, work on establishing a defensive identity. They can score, but they can't stop anyone. Two very good points there. I don't know who will be walking through that door to help this Bulls team defensively, because it sure as hell ain't Fred Hoiberg. No offense, Freddie. The Bulls need some help and development on the defensive end. They absolutely need a 3-and-D wing. So kudos. I liked those answers.
Only
as well.
12 games on the floor this season for the Bulls core three in Lowry, Markkanen, Chris Dunn, and Zach LaVine. So yes, I'm with you 110%.
Yeah. So give me somewhere between 70 and 80 games, ideally 82, of those three players and our lottery pick. Let us see what that looks like.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Tomorrow, we will dive more into these questions. So if you're listening to the show, you didn't get a chance to interact with us about maybe what your goals are for 2018, 2019 as a fan, what you want to see the Chicago Bulls do, text us or leave us a voicemail at 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you follow the Locked On Podcast Network on social media as well. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, have a wonderful hump day, Bulls Nation. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.